If there are no other questions, Sam Bass. I'll introduce you to Sam Bass, our colleague here. And the three gentlemen are going to walk around these airplanes, and Sam's going to learn a lot more about what they are. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thanks,
all
David.
Three.
It was an honor, both
thanks,
of you guys.
Sir. Mine. Thanks, sir.
We also have John Blanchette here. He owns this airplane, the MiG-17, and he restored it. And he's going to tell us a little bit about the restoration on it. And between the two of them, between Randy, they're going to tell us about the airplane. And what we're going to really be doing here is kind of an FAA walk around, except if they tell the wrong answers, I'm not going to know the difference. So but we're just going to try to get you people informed about the particular airplanes. So if we start off, Randy, would you tell us something about the specifications of the airplane?
Sure. The aircraft has a top speed of about 715 miles an hour at level flight, about 0.94 in a typical configuration. With the drop tanks on it, it has a fuel duration of about an hour and 40 to hour 45 minutes. The 17, like the 15, and like most of the Mikhovi and Gourevitch designed aircraft, were designed as an interceptor. So they weren't really designed as a go-somewhere escort fighter. They were designed to climb quick, get into a dogfight, shoot down the American bombers, and return to a base that's probably right below them.
Okay, now this particular airplane, what was its design purpose? Now, you mentioned the radar, but the MiG-17 itself, what would be its design purpose?
It was what they call a medium altitude air superiority interceptor. So in Vietnam, the MiG-21 would fly high cap. So from about 30,000 feet and above would be the MiG-21's realm, and from there down would be the MiG-17. The MiG-19 was used briefly during the war, and although we lost some aircraft to it, the 17 and the 21 were the two primary threat aircraft. In fact, we lost 81 U.S. aircraft to the MiG-17 in combat in Vietnam.
Oh, now, this airplane without the afterburner and with the burner, what would be the thrust on it?
It's about 5,600 pounds of thrust dry, what we call mill power,
right,
and about 7,800 pounds of thrust in AB.
Okay, in combat, now, what are we talking about as far as range?
Well, you know, you read the books.
What about range? Hours of operation.
Yeah, you've got an hour and a half from engine start to flame out, and that means drops and all. So if you fly an hour somewhere, you're really wanting to have a runway below you pretty quick. It was very much like the British Spitfire. It was designed as a homeland defense fighter, as an interceptor.
So it's not supposed to have very long legs.
No, it was never designed to go somewhere. The Sukhoi series fighters were designed to actually go somewhere and fight. The MiGs were more like a homeland defense fighter.
All right. Now, the standard 17, what would be the armament on it and is it the bomb load?
Well, you could carry 750 pounds of bombs or guided missiles onto the wings and the hardpoints or drop tanks. The LIM-6 version was a later design. It also carried a multi-rocket launcher inboard of the drop tanks. The standard armament on the 17 was 223 millimeters, which is a 90 caliber in U.S. terms, and a 37-millimeter cannon, just a little smaller diameter than a golf ball. Only carried 48 rounds in the big cannon, but as several of the Phantom guys I've talked to, it only...
And I believe you have one. Show the difference between that and the 50 caliber. Now, the 50 caliber, what would be in the F-86?
Correct. Yeah, the 50 was in the F-86, and the 23-millimeter would be in the MiG-15 in the Korean War.
15 and a 17.
Yeah,
now, you've already touched on, mentioned the difference in the fuselage and the wing. Tell us about the air dams. What are the air dams on there for?
Well, Henrik, one of our mechanics that we bring over from Europe that works with us every year, made a joke at an air show one time that said it's to keep the air from defecting. But really, I guess in a way that's true. It's designed to control boundary air at a high pitch angle, and it's one of the keys that in the design of the wing that made the aircraft to be able to so pitch capable, or in the case of a dogfight, such a tight turning aircraft. The big deal though is not that it just can pull 8 G's, but it can pull 8 G's without bleeding energy. In an air show, which makes it a great air show aircraft, I can get 350 to 380 knots, roll it to a 90, pull 8 G's, do a full 360, and exit the maneuver at or above the same speed I still entered it at. And that's the only aircraft until the F-16 that could do that.
Now, do you shoot when you fly?
Yeah. I like to think I was John Wayne.
I was going
to
say, if you pull an AGs, how are you going to pull it?
Yeah, and sustain it all the way around. That's the big difference. It's not the initial pitch, but it's the sustained Gs that start hurting you.
All right, the last question, then we'll talk to John here about the restoration of the airplane. You've flown a lot of different jets. How do you compare this jet to the other jets you've flown?
Well, from an air show standpoint...
Not Air Wisconsin either.
No, not Air Wisconsin either. But from an air show standpoint, you know, it's a form of entertainment if you think about it that way. You know, we want to inspire the young kids and everybody else to fly like I was inspired when I was a kid to fly. But you also want to be able to demonstrate the aircraft to its capabilities so that the crowd can actually see the aircraft way it should be flown. A lot of the vintage jets, in fact, even some of the modern jets, if you get the aircraft to speed, 450, 500 knots or something like that indicated, go through the box, your time to turn the aircraft back around and back in front of the crowd is fairly significant. With a 17, if you don't mind hurting yourself, you can do 5G rolling reversals in the corners and still be never below 300 knots and right back into the box you go. So from a performance standpoint, I mean, I'd hate to have to fight it because it would eat your launch down in lower altitudes, its maneuverability.
All right, how about now as far as the advantages and disadvantages of flying it? I mean, every airplane's got some fault, so this has got to have something.
It doesn't have air conditioning, and that's a big deal, especially when you're in a flight suit and G suit and helmet and mask and gloves and so forth, and pulling Gs at an air show in the summertime. Boy, you sweat like a... But at altitude, it's a nice flying airplane. It's got a couple of peculiarities. At a high altitude, it kind of wags its tail sometimes if it's a bumpy ride. But its biggest problem is, and when I'm working with a new pilot on the aircraft, is its lack of fuel. I can't stress enough to a new guy that, you know, when you start the engine, it's fuel critical. Once you're airborne, it's fuel emergency. You've got an hour and 35 or 40 minutes till it's going to quit. So if you're cross country and everything has to be planned. You know, you got to make sure the runway you're going to has got an alternate. I mean, all kinds of things that you don't think of sometimes in other aircraft, it's in your mind because you're only going to be airborne for an hour. And it's all about the fuel.
Well, now, speaking of the fuel, of course, you're burning a lot more fuel when you're in AB. If this airplane, you're in Vietnam and you operated out of AB and you're in battle, how much time you got with it then? 45 minutes?
Yeah, probably. Of course, you're going to be higher altitude than an air show, obviously. Sure. So it's a fuel burn and the efficiency is much better. The way the thing is designed, the drop tanks feed automatically. There's, unlike some of the other jets, there's no on and off for it. So they fill into the main tank, which is right behind the cockpit, constantly. That overflows in two conforming tanks in the rear of the aircraft, whether the pilot wants them to or not. So the split second that he punches them off in combat, the aircraft is totally full of fuel. So at altitude, he's probably got an hour plus. Unless he's, you know, combat maneuvering. And then, of course, his AB, you get about a 39% increase in thrust, but you're going to increase fuel burn by about 35%. So it's almost a one-for-one trade-off for the extra power.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. Let's talk to Ron here a little bit. You restored the airplane. It's your airplane, and you did a long restoration on this thing. Tell us a little bit about the restoration on it.
I bought it in a scrapyard in Poland. And had it shipped over here, and I was naive at the time because I was told that it needed a little work before you could put it in the air. And I thought I'd been working on cars for my whole life, and I thought, well, you just fixed it up and you called a pilot over and he just went up and flew around a little bit. Well, I certainly learned that wasn't the case. When it got here, it had been pretty well vandalized. It was pretty well corroded. Even the fuselage was twisted in transit. It had been taken apart on a cold winter day, and most of the parts had dropped into the snow and been lost. But I didn't know any better. I was kind of naive, so I just started work, piece by piece by piece, and about 15 years later, it finished. And then you started to operate it. Then now you can re-restore it because you find out the parts that don't work now. And we're still changing parts, even to today. We have parts that are giving us problems.
Now, is this the paint job that when you got it, was this the paint scheme on it?
No, it had silver paint on it. After about 5 years, they started to paint them because it was too difficult to keep up natural metal. This has steel rivets on here, too, that will rust and have been sanded many times. So the Poles, after about 5 years, started to paint the aircraft. And then they'd go all over the plane every few years with DA Sanders And that's what all those marks are there. And they took the paint off and painted and put stripper. This paint job is what it was when it was built new in 1960. This is the way it came out of the factory. About 10,800 total were built, and less than 300 of this one, as far as I can determine, of this type of nose arrangement. Only one flying in the world, right. There's many in museums around the world. There's even one out at Pima in the museum there in the desert, been sitting there for years. But this is the only flying one. Well, I showed you the 23 millimeter, but there's 80 rounds per box, so it didn't fire like a machine gun. It went boom, 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 you know. But one hit would take down anything else.
All right. How about you, sir? I'd like for you to add something here.
What would you like me to add?
Whatever you want to.
Well, for those of you that ever aspire to flying something like this, I'd continue to encourage it. I started with flying T-33s. And I've owned an F-86. Absolutely love flying the 17, except for the heat and all that sort of downside for it. It's a wonderful flying airplane. Just such a balanced airplane. I can see why it was such a good gun platform. You know, years ago, when the F-4 was first being reintroduced back into the Heritage program, I spent 3.5 years flying as a threat aircraft at air shows with the Phantom, and. Some of the things that happened that were really, really awe-inspiring to me. I would meet guys my dad's age that had flown Phantoms or 105s, et cetera, up at north of the Red River in Vietnam, and get stories of, you know, guys that shot down MiGs and guys that were shot down by MiGs. And we did some film work on that. Some of that stuff I think is online now with two aircraft flying together. And I think there's going to be a Phantom here this week, which will be its last public appearance before the Air Force officially retires the QF. Four programs. So,
all right, Randy and John, both individually, of course. What got you into this Warbird program of restoring these airplanes and flying them for the people to look at?
I was naive and didn't know any better. I thought you just fixed it up like you did a used car. But I found out that wasn't the case. So I just worked at it, and then it became, as I worked at it, I learned more and more about it and accumulated more parts, and it became more of a challenge. And then I realized it was going to be the only one flying in the world. So I really gave it the all after that.
How about you, Randy?
Well, I grew up part of the time in a little town called Riesel, Texas, outside of Waco, Texas. And then the rest of the time I spent on our family's cattle ranch north of Breckenridge, Texas. And Nelson Azell and started with Howard Pardue there, a Warbird restoration facility that's probably second only to Chino. To this day, you can go in there and there'll be a Spitfire building a Corsair wings from scratch and Mustangs and a Hinkle. And just so as a kid, getting to play with that kind of stuff and be around it, I was just ruined to do anything else.
Well, how about when you're on a tour, Randy, and you fly a lot, when you meet a veteran, what does it mean to you?
It means a lot. I mean, I have literally seen guys with tears in their eyes after the Phantom and the MiG got to fly together and we're following each other around a tail slot, coming up and telling stories that happened over Hanoi and about some of their buddies and things that happened to them. And a couple of years ago at Seymour Johnson, I flew against a Phantom there for the show where we did of course, I had to lose every time. But that's okay. It was so much fun. They had about 700 veterans from Vietnam there. And to hear those stories, and someone brought their kids and said, you know, this is what it was like. And it was something from their war at an air show. And it's very rare to see anything from that conflict. We have lots of great stuff from World War II. We have some things from Korea, but we really don't represent our Vietnam veterans very well in air shows typically. So to fly a Phantom and a MiG together in the same sky was pretty special.
Okay. I want to thank you guys. Thank you for bringing it here. Thank you for the restoration.
Thank you, Sam.
We need more people like you.